Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is June 23rd, 2016, and today I was going to be talking about, since we're real close to the Brazil Olympics, talking about that, and I've got a couple athletes I'm working with toward the Brazil Olympics, so I'll kind of give you an inside story of what that's like to work with someone that's going toward the Olympics, and also media coverage and how to be a media expert and what to do, what not to do when you're talking with the media, you know, about your athletes. That's really important consideration too, as well as you know, what to do with them and how to, you know, cover things like you know, the inside story working with these 2016 Olympics and Olympic trials, what you need to know about athletes that want to make their team, you know, to get to the trials. You got to get there before you get to the Olympics, of course, and the Olympic trials are at various times for different sports. In the case of swimming, with my athletes, they're coming up this coming weekend, and then mistakes to avoid right before the trials, and then also what ethical considerations working with Olympians and other, and of course this applies to any other top-level, high-level athletes too. So, yeah, Michelle, you had a question. Why don't we do that first here? That sounds great.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Joanne. I've actually been in touch with a trainer here in Canada that's been is working with the Chinese Olympic team.
Wow.
For the, you know, Rio. And we're meeting to have a discussion about coaching this demographic, because
hey.
Somebody's just joined the call.
Oh, let me just welcome them. Hello. Who's that, Jeff?
This is Will.
Oh, hi, Will. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
Okay, good. Yeah, it sounds a little bit fuzzy on the line, but that's okay. So I'm just answering a question first by Michelle here. So, yeah, sorry, Michelle, to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, there's, you know, with coaching the Asians, I don't like to broad brush there's a certain nature about that demographic, which is quite stoic and reserved and a little bit harder to penetrate. And I'm just curious if you have any insights into that or ways in which to sort of get through. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Do you want to describe it a little bit more, like give an example of an athlete or the type of personality?
I don't have an athlete in mind because it's pretty much the whole team that is not really very open and expressive. And
so you're talking about the Chinese Olympic team, the entire team, or just one sport?
Well, he's actually working with several sports, and this is what he's noticed.
Yeah. Okay. So, for those of you who just joined us, yes, Michelle's talking about a coach that's up in Canada there, working with the Chinese Olympic team. Is that right? Hello? Oh, I just heard a ding. Maybe sometimes Michelle comes on the line and then loses the connection. Is that you again, Michelle?
Hi, I got disconnected.
Okay, no problem.
Sorry.
I figured that, because I know that happens sometimes with your Skype.
Yeah.
Also, did someone else just join us, too? I heard another ding, I think.
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good.
Oh, good. Okay, so we're first answering a question by Michelle here about working with a coach from the Chinese Olympic team there, and just your question about the athletes are kind of stoic and not really that open. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, reserved, a lot of pride, you know, just not wanting to expose himself in any way. And I mean, maybe this applies, like people can relate to this with some of their athletes that they work with. I mean, it's not limited to the Asian culture. But those athletes that are just a little harder to penetrate and loosen up, do you have any methods or techniques to just get through those barriers?
Yeah, and are you working with, is he asking you for your advice kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting, yeah.
I know.
So how did you get in touch with him, or how did that happen first?
I reached out to him. And he responded favorably, and so now I've got to put my thinking cap on.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. Yeah, it seems like a lot of times people from Asia, it could be anyone, but if you have people from Asian countries, a lot of times are, as you say, reserved and, not as open with emotions. I guess a good question to ask too is to find out in their culture, well, the Chinese culture, is it do they have sports psychology there? I don't know if you ask them that question, sports psychologists, are they used to working with those kind of folks, or is that kind of a brand new thing?
Yeah, no, they work with them.
Okay. It's a tricky area because you want the more open someone is, of course, the more that you can work with them. I guess the key thing is to ask some questions about what's going on in their with their training and ask more open ended questions. If you ask questions that are just a yes no question, of course they'll be. You get a yes-no answer, not much information, right? So open-ended questions like how's your training going, and of course they could answer good, bad, or tell me about your something, tell me about your. How did your day go today or something? Those are good kind of questions to ask. Do you get nervous? Do you feel nervous with the Olympic Games coming right up? That's a natural thing. You start with emotions that aren't as scary or not as difficult to talk about. That would be a good thing. Do you feel nervousness with your competition, that kind of thing, and getting them to, just talk about their who is your competition? They're very competitive, Chinese and Asians in general. Athletes are very competitive, but if you ask them. Who's your competition? They'll, tell you who, specific people or. Is that you back, Michelle?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Jeez, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to say just ask them questions about like who's your competition, and they could give you specific either names within their own country or other countries, and they're. They may talk about, anger is one of the emotions that's most easy to express. They may be angry about certain things or frustrated that so-and-so gets better, the different person gets, is the star on the team or gets more attention, that kind of thing. That's something that people more likely talk about. Is the emotion of anger and those kind of things. And if you could get them in a group, a small group, usually 6 to 7 people is maximum. If you get more than that, then people won't talk as much or share. But you could, do that exercise like... it's really good where you just have let's say a gymnastics team. I mean, the Chinese are really big on gymnastics and a lot of certain sports, and let's say if it's a gymnastics team, have pick out one person and everyone tells one thing that they like about that person, or what's one of their attributes, one of their strengths, and then you go around to the next person and everyone says one of their strengths, and that's a way to really get group, we'll have people open up in a positive way, you know, about their attributes, and it's a good team building kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a good exercise to start with. It's more something easy to do to build build a stronger sense of cohesion. So those are some ideas. I guess there's probably sometimes the pressure is just amazing. Yeah, usually they're. You know, you see the athletes working so hard from a really young age. They're almost taught, like you say, to be reserved and not open with emotions, and so they almost have to be taught how to do that. What are your thoughts, Michelle?
Yeah, I agree. I think what you said about the anger is really awesome for one-on-one coaching, to just get them to talk about those feelings and doing the group cohesion, just so that it just builds team unity. And I will definitely look into and think about the idea of pressure and how to deal with that, because I think that's a real pervasive feeling in that culture. And there's a huge pressure, and there's even a bit of shame, you know, that's linked in with that if you don't perform well. So,
yeah.
And that can, take the joy away from your sport very quickly. So, yeah, this gives me a great place to start with, and I'll just do a little more pondering on it. So thank you.
Yeah, that's great. I think the pressure kind of thing is important to they're always, competing against other people, and being compared maybe against other people on their team. But if you can say that it's better to be competitive within yourself and compare yourself with, how you were doing a week ago, and see if you can have, what gains did you make this week, as opposed to just and be able to congratulate and reward yourself for a good workout. And even if your coaches don't reward you, because that's one of the problems within the Chinese culture and the Russian cultures, a lot of those is that they're very strict with the coaches, and they only talk about the mistakes, and you have to improve this, or you messed up here, you did this wrong, and they never get any real positive encouragement. So if you were to give them some, tell them how they could give themselves positive encouragement, even if their coaches don't. Say, rate themselves on how did that practice go today, on a scale of 1 to 10, and give themselves praise, kind of thing, and teach each other. Volleyball teams, that kind of thing. You always see when they do a good shot. They'll each get together and give them a hand slap or high five kind of thing and congratulate. Yeah, good shot. They tell each other. So if there's a team sport, encourage them to encourage each other when they have a really good shot kind of thing. High five each other kind of thing. So that's some other ideas too. Okay, great.
Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So I just wanted to talk about Olympians today, but I just also wanted to welcome Jeff and Willie. You're there too?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Joanne, it's Amy. I just got on the call too.
Oh, hi, Amy. How are you? Good.
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Yeah. Good to hear from you. Yeah.
Thank
well,
you.
Do other people have questions? Do you want to just do another question, and then I'll go into the material here? Or anyone want to tell me about what they're doing, progress, anything that you're doing with athletes? Jeffrey. Okay. Is that someone? Did someone start to speak? Okay. Well, let's go ahead and do the talk a little bit about athletes for the Olympics here, and then we'll come back and circle around with any ideas that you have and comments and questions. So let me just I'm going to just put this on lecture mode so we can get a real clear recording here, and then we'll come back. And if you have a question, you can just star 6 mutes your phone, and then or star 6 will unmute your phone for a question. Okay. Okay, so I wanted to talk about one of my clients. I'll call her Leanne, just for, you know, because she wants confidentiality, of course, and it's important to keep confidentiality at this time for you know, before the Olympics in terms of her identity. Maybe afterwards, she may want to give a testimonial kind of thing. But one thing I wanted to mention, she's a swimmer and was in the last Olympics in London, and then is going for the next Olympics here in Brazil. And one thing I wanted to mention with the media, a lot of times, you know, some media might call, they're always interested in, you know, it's great that you could be a media expert and talking about the Olympics and different issues that are going on. Of course, this particular Olympics, there's all kinds of problems that, you know, Rio is having, and athletes are worried about that. You know, the Zika virus, that, you know, it's not only affecting pregnant women, but if you get Zika virus, you can get a lot of people don't know it's everyone is at risk. You can get a neurological problems and movement problems, you know, long term for life from that. They're finding out new things about the Zika virus all the time, so that's a worry. And as some athletes have actually withdrawn from the Brazil Olympics. You know, one of the American athletes, a cyclist, withdrew because his wife is pregnant. But people, there's that, and then there's, you know, all the crime and you know, that it's just not safe there. And I was planning to go. I was hoping to go there because I'm working with two athletes right now going to Brazil, but I've decided not to go because of so many issues there, the Zika virus, and that it's just really not safe to travel there unless you're with a group or a team together. But at the same time, I can continue to work with athletes, my athletes, you know, remotely by phone and text, and there's plenty of ways, FaceTime and Skype, all of that. So there's also problems with, you know, in the pollution of the water and all these things that are going on. But with, so those are things that you could talk with about to the media, but I don't deal with that specifically with athletes. We don't talk about all those worries because they've got enough to think about with just making their Olympic team and being in shape for that. And so, but one thing that the media want to do and other people want to do is if you say, oh, I'm working with someone toward the Olympics, you say, oh, who is it? Tell me their name. And people want to know names and specifics and all, and it's really important to not give out names or specific people because, you know, after the Olympics, you can ask them for their permission for a testimonial after they've competed. I think that's good, but they... But beforehand, you know, there's just too much pressure going on, and you don't want to reveal names of people to the media unless there's a specific kind of situation, unless they're really willing to. Now, for the last Olympics, I had an athlete, Shannon, who was in the in the track and field, and she was willing to do that. She was fine with that, which was great. It was an exceptional, it was a really good situation. She happened to be local here in the Bay Area, but most of the time, a lot of athletes are not local, and they just have a lot of pressure going on. So athletes are each different in terms of what they want and what they need, and a lot of athletes want confidentiality, or they don't want people to know that they're working with a sports psychologist right, you know, right beforehand. especially if there's things going on, if they're a university or a close-knit team where they don't want their, if there are issues going on with their other team members and they don't want team members to know, you know, that they're working with someone about the sports psychology part. So I'm really careful to not, reveal those specifics. So that's something important to know in case a media person calls you. The first thing they're going to ask is, oh, you're working with Olympians? Oh, who are you working with? They wanted to give names right away. So it's important not to do that, but just to say, you can say their sport and say that here's the kinds of issues I'm working with and here's how I help them. And they're very happy to, you know, interview you for that. So with this particular athlete I'm working with, we'll call her Leanne. She came to me because she's going for the Olympics. She's a swimmer, and she's it feels like her main issues were getting intimidated by other swimmers. And she says, I see other swimmers; they have faster times, they're seated faster than me, and so I feel like I'm racing for second place or third place or fourth place. And she says, when I'm in a race, they start catching up, and I say, I tell myself it's over. I'm not fully committed the entire time. I change my mind about it, you know, in the middle of the race. And then she says that kind of blows the race. And she says I could have gone faster. So kind of talking herself out of the race, right, in the middle. And she said that happens more in specific kinds of the faster swimming events. And so she says, if I'm not there mentally, I don't swim well. So that's a perfect entree for me, for anyone who's into sports psychology or mental training. If you're not there, if someone says, if I'm not there mentally, I don't swim well, that's exactly where you can step in and help with that. And she gave an example. I just wanted to, kind of give you an inside story of how I worked with her. She gave an example. Oftentimes it's a bad situation, something bad happened or some kind of crisis or mini crisis that happens that will lead someone to call you, and that's what you want to find out. What is it that led you to call or, to ask why were you interested in working with someone in this, in the sports psychology area. She said she had a bad practice one day, one Monday, her shoulders were tighter than usual, and she was really behind all of the other swimmers, barely making the intervals, and she tried to push through it. She was really frustrated, and she said, and she kept saying, okay, if I keep swimming, I'll loosen up, but her shoulders were really hurting a lot, and but it wasn't an injury situation. When I asked her, she said it was, because that's important to determine, is if it's an injury, then you need to have that checked out. She said she has not been injured and wasn't injured, but it's just a matter of tightness and working so hard. So she said she just, her shoulders were hurting so much. The coach said she really told her she broke down mentally, and she just started crying and right in the middle of a workout. And that led her to, actually, her brother was concerned about her when she was close with her brother. Her brother called me or looked for someone in the San Francisco Bay Area who was in sports psychology and found me. And then I was able to talk with first the brother, and then he encouraged her to call me. And so then we had a good conversation. And so then we started talking about how to deal with that. And we had a first session on the phone. We've had about six sessions, something like that now. And she is, she talked about issues coming up on the Olympic trials. They're coming up actually this weekend, and they'll be in Omaha, Nebraska. And so a good time frame to work with someone, too, is usually a couple of months, 2 to 3 months before a major event is really important. It's not, oftentimes athletes don't want someone to step in, right a week or two before a major event or before the Olympics, because they just want to work with people that are close, they're close to in their lives, of course. And like she mentioned, an older coach came in from high, her club team coach that she used to work with many years ago, all of a sudden is calling her and wanting to work with her, wanting, you know, kind of giving her advice, and it's very frustrating to her because right now, because she's almost ready to go to Olympic trials, and people, oftentimes people want to get on the bandwagon and get in and somehow take credit for their success, and athletes are very, that's one thing to be aware of, that athletes are, get really, they have enough pressure going on, and they don't want to, when it gets to be 1 or 2 weeks before an event, they don't want to start working with someone new or have other people all of a sudden show up in their lives from before. They want to just have this close-knit group of people that they work with. So it's good to, you know, make those connections 3 months beforehand or so. So I asked her about her past events and the best events she's done, and she said that, you know, for instance, in the Olympic trials, you know, ask her for a peak, tell me about a peak performance so I could make her a visualization before, and she talked about the Olympic trials in 2012, which was also in Omaha, Nebraska, for swimming, for our U.S. trials, and that led her to going to the Olympics in London, and that was one of her best events before, and she talked about, you know, thousands of people were watching her, and she did one longer event, swimming event first, and she swam it way too slow. She said she went afterwards, she went into the team restroom afterwards. She was crying and just kind of releasing all kinds of energy, and then her teammate comforted her there. And that's one of the things, oh, I was going to mention, Michelle, when you're saying Chinese people or Asian people often don't, you know, show emotion, but sometimes if they're close with a teammate, they may show, you could ask them, you know, when do your teammates comfort you, and find out, oftentimes teammates will comfort each other when they're had a bad bad performance. So that's a way that they can learn to be open. So she was really open to her teammate comforting her. She said she was mad at herself. She got re-energized after that longer swim event, and then she went into her her sprint events, the 100 meters, and she was you know, she really had this you know, kind of worked on her resilience. I call it her bouncing back muscle. And she says, I refocused, I needed to make the team. And there's something on Twitter called Honey Badger. She was saying that she read something about Honey Badger Don't Care. And it's a it's some kind of popular thing on Twitter she read. And just meaning that, you know, to say to herself, what's done is done. You know, I didn't do as well on that event, but now it's time to focus on my next race. Right, and, you know, get out there and I said, write that down as an affirmation, you know, or power words. What's done is done. Now it's time to focus on my next race, and to keep saying that over and over. That last race doesn't need to dictate my next race. What's going to happen? So she did end up, in the 100. She ended up qualifying for the Olympic team. She was watching her teammates warm up. She was keeping in shape, keeping motivated, watching others do well, and they made it look so easy. She says it gave her motivation seeing all these people making the Olympic team, her friends. She got remotivated. She swam well and did really well. She was looking forward to the finals and finding out who made the team. And she was, at this point, she was making the relay, not the individual event. In swimming, you can, you can either go for an individual event or you can go for just making the relay team, because they have extras that make those, that are still on the Olympic team, that make the relay for the various relays that go on. So in every session, she just took it one session at a time, which is what she needs to do now for Brazil as well. Is say for the London Olympics, she said that if I make just each session, she said, okay, now the first one, all I have to do is get in the top 16. You know, that was for the first heat. And then the next, she made it up to the next level, and then she said, all I have to do is get in the top eight. And then for the semifinals, she said, okay, I just need to make the top eight, swim in the first heat. And she said she was second place in that heat. And everyone was fast. Everyone was pushing each other, and they all went faster. And she said, I just snuck in eighth place to make the finals. So she had to get in the top eight to make the finals, and she just barely made it getting eighth place. So, you know, it was just she did just exactly just what she needed to do to make the finals. She said I was so she was so fueled. And then with the finals, she said she was just listening to some music on her iPod, and there was, you know, she was just there realizing, someone else said to her, there's more to life than just competitive swimming, you know, be in the moment, just be grateful for being here. And she, you know, was, then she was more able to socialize and look at this as, you know, other swimmers, like in the ready room right before the competition, they call it the ready room where you get ready to swim your meet, and everyone was really nervous, and they're saying, oh, God, I feel so sluggish, and, you know, saying all this negative stuff. And she was just kept listening to music and saying to herself, you know, be grateful that I'm here, not listening to other people's negativity. And then she, in the finals, she said she did the warm-up, and she just had to get in the top six. She said just beat two people to be able to make the Olympic team, to make the relay on the Olympic team. And she said, so, you know, she knows exactly what, you know, it's not swim as fast as you can or swim the fastest time. You know, she knew exactly, placing-wise is the important thing there, just beat two people to make the top six of the eight that were swimming. And she said it was the ballsiest swim I've ever done, the way she described it. Ballsiest swim I've ever done. She says I was next to a girl that takes it out really fast. I go out with that girl, and I stayed with her in the first 50 and then pulled away the second 50. And she said I got my hand on the wall. I touched it, came in fourth place, and with a lot of emotion, made the Olympic team. So she said she was that was her most confident race. So now, and then she went to the Olympics, and they actually ended up getting the bronze medal for the relay. So now, so she had that, she relayed that information to me, and with the, you know, the visualization, pre-assessment visualization I did for her, and then did that visualization based on those things that I just told you, what she said to me. And then now, so now we're going for the next Olympics here for Brazil, you know, carrying that energy into Brazil here. And so the issues are, you know, her coach had said, had a meeting with her and said she, you know, a goal is to make changes in her training mentality. If you want to see a change, you need to make a change. Get out of your comfort zone and lead your lane more, push yourself in practice, and beat some of the top swimmers there some of the time, and, you know, accept being uncomfortable and getting almost being comfortable with being uncomfortable. So she was able to do that, and in some of the practices. And so now her goal for the last Olympics, previous one in London, was to make the relay, just the relay team in swimming. And now for Brazil, she's decided to step it up, and her goal is to make an individual event, not just the relay. When you make the individual event, you can also, then you also get on the relay team, so she could do both. So she wants to make have a bigger role on the team. And so she's, you know, kind of changing expectations of herself as to move up. But that's a little bit scary, of course. And and so one of the things we had to deal with was she was, you know, these are some of the kind of just interpersonal things that go on with teams, is that she had one other swimmer that she was having difficulty with, that they're best friends, but they the other person gets on her nerves a lot, and they were going to room together at the Olympic trials, and she was getting really nervous about that because of, you know, when you're in the room together with someone else who's driving you crazy or just, you know, too close and making negative comments a lot, and it just can really ruin your race. And so we talked about that, and she talked to, I suggested she go to her coaches and have them randomly, that she did not want to room with this person and be able to room with someone else there. And another thing was that there are certain people that are on the, it's called the road to, they call it the road to Rio, people who are expected to make the team. And then there's other people who are just barely hanging on, who are not expected to make the team. And this other woman that she's having difficulty with is not expected, you know, she'll go there, but she may not make the, make her event. And in that case, you know, she, and it's a different swimming event. So she would, her roommate would end up, she said, after she swam her first day, if she doesn't make the team, then she's going to be in party mode, you know, a totally, or a different, you know, a different mentality of, okay, my event's done, now I can just relax and enjoy the Olympics. Whereas my client is has to swim the whole week in lots of different events and has to stay in focus mode the whole time. So I agreed with her. It's not good to be rooming with someone else who's going to be in, you know, just swim that first day, possibly, you know, likely not make that, her team is not as good, and then be checked out mentally, which is a whole different kind of mindset. So so she did request with her coaches to that they randomly reassign people and that she be roomed with someone else. So that was really good that she did that, I think, and able to change her environment so that she's able to room with someone else who's, you know, on the road to Rio that's expected to make the team. So they're all in the kind of same focus mode at the same time. And because she said this other person was, you know, just causing unnecessary stress and would lash out at her and that kind of thing. So it's really good to be, and you can't change someone after a certain period of time when you get really close to the Olympics. You don't want to be in a bad, really negative interpersonal situation. You can't really be working out all that stuff then. You want to just, you know, change the situation, change the environment so you're not around that person as much. So she worked that out. So she's now this going to be able to room with someone else. And now, and the last thing I wanted to mention, and then we'll go to some questions here in your comments, she wanted to, she changed her reasons. She said she wrote down, I had her as a homework assignment, write down a list of reasons why you want to approach this Olympic trials differently than the last one. The last one she was going for just the relay team. And this one she's going for the, you know, an individual event. And she said she kind of, it's riskier, actually, you know, because if she goes for trying to make it an individual event, there's a chance she might not achieve her goal, and it might make her feel more defeated. Whereas if she just goes for the relay, it's almost assured she would get on the relay team. But she, you know, we talked about that quote you may have heard before, you miss 100% of the shots you don't make, you know, and if you don't try, the answer is always no. And so it's really important to, she thinks, and she says her coaches have faith that she can make it individually in an event. So we wrote down all the different things that her reasons for, that why she wants to make the individual event and why she can, you know, just that is the number, one thing, she's the underdog. And so, you know, she's not one of the top, you know, well-known swimmers, and that's actually a good thing. Just like many, if you're the underdog, then there's less pressure, less expectations, so you're free to do more of what you are able to. She said she's the fittest she's ever been. She's been leading the lanes, the swim lanes, in almost every practice, and having other people behind her. She's getting out of her comfort zone more. Her stroke is improving. She's stronger in the weight room. She's worked on little details like her technique, her catch. You know, when the hand comes in the water, that's called the catch. And she's more efficient with her stroke, and she has a better breath. So we wrote down all of these things. I wrote them down, and then I I turned those. When you have a list like that of reasons, that's a great way to I'll write them down as she's saying them, so you can send that to her and your client in an email as well, so they have it in written form. And then also make them a MP3 with that, turn those into power words and just say, I am more efficient with my stroke. My coaches have faith I can make it individually. Use it as I statements, so you can bring that, make it personal for her. I'm the fittest I've ever been. I'm leading the lane in my practices. I'm getting out of my comfort zone. And saying each of those power words two times to get it, to make it really clear, so she can internalize those. And, little things like the results that she's been having, like she found out that last time for the last Olympics, she made it for the relay team, but she only missed by 0.3 seconds of making it on an individual event, so it was really tiny. So just reminding herself of that, she was really close last time, she can do it this time. Things like, I want to play a bigger role on the team, that's a great affirmation, great power words. And she said her friends made it individually last time on the Australian team. She has friends from other countries, like the Australian team, and we all have the same goal. So oftentimes when you have an Olympic athlete from here, they may they develop friendships from people in other countries for their sport, and that's really good when they can do that. So they're all trying to, because then they can encourage each other to make their own teams, and it can be really a nice way to have that international friendship that goes on, because oftentimes they meet various times during the year for other competitions too. And she also said, I do well under pressure, and others crack under pressure. So that's a good affirmation I gave her as well. And she wants to really do something special, to go beyond just what she's done before, but do something really special for this Olympics. So I made her that MP3 and gave that to her. And then, so we've been working together once a week by phone. And then, but as it gets closer to the Olympics, I said, and if you're working with someone, make yourself more available during this time. I said, if anything comes up, you can call me and we can do another session by phone. They're at the Olympic trials, and then during when she goes to Brazil, she asked to do sessions by FaceTime, which is an iPhone application, an app, or Skype works too. It's good to have something set up like that, like FaceTime, because a lot of athletes use that for communicating, which uses the internet rather than phone, so it's free. When you're in an when they're traveling internationally, so that's a good way to stay in touch with them as well as by texting or email. So that's an example of that's where we're at right now. She's doing the Olympic trials this weekend in Omaha, in Nebraska, and which happens to be the city I was born in, which is kind of cool, interesting coincidence. So I just wanted to check in with you all now with any comments you have or questions about this or anything that you'd like to ask about your clients and other things that you're doing. Let me just open up the lines here. Okay, so I opened up the line so anyone can talk. And did anyone else new join us as well? You can speak. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, Joanne.
Yes.
Okay, great. And so, I know, or Amy and Jeff and we've got Willie and Michelle, and I don't know, is there other new people, if you can introduce yourself? I know we've got a new person, June, who just joined the program, too, and she was hoping to make the call, but she can't make it today, but she had a question as well. I wanted to answer her question. But first, let me get questions from you guys who are live here. Any response to, how do you respond to the, you know, what we just talked about here, or what questions do you have?
I have a comment.
Okay.
Dr. Joanne. Yeah, what you were saying about pushing herself in the lane and taking some risks,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a really, I think when you are putting yourself out there and you're taking risks, you actually, it can get you into that sort of zone or flow state because you got some skin on the line, you know?
Yeah. Skin in the game, yeah.
Yeah. And you're just pushing yourself beyond maybe what you think is possible. It gets your attention.
Yeah, and you can think, hey, I'm out here. I'm doing something I've never done before.
Yeah.
That was when I did the Hawaii Ironman triathlon. I'd never done anything that long before. And at one point, you know, I just think, this is scary. What am I doing out here? But then I just think, okay, I'm out here. Let's just go. This is a great opportunity. Let's go for it.
Uh-huh.
Just kept pushing myself, and then one part of the mind might say, I've never been here before, I don't know what to do. But then if you can get to the point where you realize, hey, I'm up here, so you know, I must have be up here in the front because of my abilities, I belong here. So that's an important thing to have the athletes say to themselves. So that's a good point, Michelle. That's great. Yeah, when you're taking risks, you're pushing hard, and it gets you in the zone because you have to. Oftentimes you can access abilities that you never knew you had. Yeah, that's good. How about Jeff or Willie or Amy? You guys have questions?
Hi, it's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy.
I was just going to say that from all your experience working with Olympic athletes, do you find that when push comes to shove and they're in a situation where they really have to perform, that they actually, you know, have those skills and they kind of click into that mode that they have to be in, that sometimes maybe it's just the anticipation where they start doubting themselves, but once they're actually there and doing it, they kind of, you know, rise to the occasion?
Yeah, I think most people do. Yeah, that's a great question, Amy. So it's, when you're asking, just so everyone can hear, when push comes to shove, can athletes, the anticipation, it could lead to anticipate. You know, those self-doubts are there. Everyone has those, and I think it's good to normalize that, which I usually try to do that and tell people, self-doubts will be there. I mean, top athletes always have those just because we're all human, and, negative thoughts come in. So just expect those, but just the key is to not give them that much weight and just let them imagine there's a leaf floating by, and they're just floating by like a leaf in the wind, or just look up at a cloud in the sky and say, okay, that thought is just like a cloud in the sky, just floating by, and I want to get back to, saying I am in my element here. And just get into what do I need to do right now, just that small moment that the task at hand, and not focus on, you could focus on, thousands of people are watching me, or this is the Olympics, it's the biggest sporting event in the world, the millions of people are watching, and those kind of thoughts are overwhelming, and they can cause somebody to have too much pressure. But if you can just get into, hey, this is like telling this woman I'm working with, just be yourself, just tell yourself, I've done thousands of these swims before, this is just another swim, I can do it. Whoever's out there, it's just me and the and the other swimmers. And just this, all I'm thinking about is this is one event, but not to think about the result, the end result so much. Of course, we want the end result to be, you know, winning or getting a medal or doing well, but the end results can really get in the way, get into that kind of almost micro, you know, laser focus on thing. And that can help, I think, to just focus on the details, you know, making sure, okay, have my goggles on right, and am I, you know, take some deep breaths and smile. Smiling is an amazing thing that can really help to reduce the tension. And say, you know, in that sense of being grateful, I think is a really good one to get over the self-doubts and the pressure. To say, I'm grateful for being here, and just being able to relax. Just say, this is fun. This is enjoyable. You know, how cool is this to be out here doing? You know, just the ability to swim and to swim well. You know, being thankful for your body that you can do this amazing thing and do it really well. So just, you know, kind of putting it in perspective and is a really good thing. So most athletes can do that, I think. The ones that we have to work with the most are, you know, if someone has had a bad experience or you know, made a mistake or a failure, then that thought comes in, am I going to mess up again? I hope I don't mess up. I hope I don't make a mistake. And that's when you can really work with someone to change the movie in their mind, I think, change that and say, and go back to when they were doing really well. Yeah, does that help, Amy? I don't know if
yes,
yes. Yeah, good, okay, yeah. So yeah, anything else you want to share about what you're doing, Amy? Or
sure. I just had a good meeting yesterday. I actually had lunch with the coach at St. Joe's, the tennis coach, and I really wasn't sure what was going to happen this next year because I've been working, you know, with the teams there for the last 2 years, and I just finished 7 workshops and I met with the athletic director, so I wasn't sure, you know, whether this was going to be another thing that he wanted to do. But I just found out yesterday that, yes, he definitely wants me to come back and do another 7 workshops with the team. And he had a good idea that what he wants to do, based on the evaluations that I had from them, is work in a buddy system with them. So we're going to create a random buddy system in between the workshops so that and I'm going to give them things to work on so that in between the workshops, when I see them, there's going to be some continuity and they can work together and buddy together on the different exercises and concepts that I'm going to give them. So I thought that was a really good idea that he had.
Yeah. That's a great idea, yeah. So you can, it's almost like having an accountability partner with a buddy system and somebody to check in with and do things with. Yeah, like during the week, in between the each of the workshops, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they'll be working together during the week, and we're also going to match people together that wouldn't necessarily pick each other. So it'll build on you know, the team harmony and the spirit of the team.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's great. So it'd be good to, you know, give them questions or something they could ask each other, and then in between a workshop, and then you could, what's good is come back into the workshop and have each person, like with a buddy system, if you've got 2 people, a partner, then you could say, okay, so each person stand out, tell me what your buddy did. Or tell me what they were able to accomplish. So if the person kind of reports on the other person, then it makes them more attuned to, you know, doing that teamwork and more, and it builds, you know, togetherness, the support that you're supporting your buddy and saying, yeah, here's what they accomplished, kind of thing.
Yeah.
What type of team for the next time do you do?
What's that, Lori?
I was asking about what type of team building exercises does she do during her seminar.
She's doing tennis, right?
No, yes. I was asking, yeah.
What type of team building do I do?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, all different things. One of the things, Dr. Joanne, there was a book that you recommended to me about team building, about different things.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what that was? I have it upstairs, but I can't remember what it was called. But there are different things that that you can do with that, you know, to get them working together. I also did one of the things at the beginning of the call that Dr. Joanne was talking about, where you break them up in groups and you have them talk about what they see the other teammates' strengths are. And they really liked doing that. They liked hearing the compliments, and they liked talking about what the strengths were that they see in each other. So that was a really good team-building exercise that you helped me with.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, Willie, did you have an idea, Willie, or what other any comments?
Well, I know that a lot of times when I'm doing different presentations, that when they're working together and doing the role play, they really like that.
Yeah, role plays are great. Yeah, you're working with football players, really, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is on the whole other spectrum from ballet that that Amy's working with. Football versus ballet. Although football could be or tennis, football is like ballet out on the field, right?
Oh yeah. Not to mention, with the flexibility, a lot of athletes are looking at yoga and also different types of dance.
Uh huh.
For the stretching.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Amy. That's great that you shared that with the tennis. And congratulations on doing those seven workshops. And that's fantastic. And congratulations, they want you back next time. That's really an affirmation that you were doing a good job there, right?
Yeah, I'm happy about it because I really love working with them, and it's so convenient. It's 10 minutes from my house, and he's a great coach, and it's worked well. So I'm fortunate that it worked out again.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that buddy system can work too. It makes people work together really well. So good. Yeah, that's great. Jeff, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, good. Yeah. Did you have a question too? You were working with
a little bit last night about the MMA fighter that I just picked up.
Yeah, MMA stands for mixed martial arts, right, for those of you who don't know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So is it a woman or a man?
It's a woman.
Uh-huh.
And, one of the things, worked with, a lot of people, but I've never worked with an MMA fighter. And the part that she's really concerned about is the fear that she feels. And so I'm just trying to get some ideas on maybe some of the things that you could help me through that.
Yeah, what kind of fears does she have? Have you asked her exactly what she fears?
Well, yeah, I mean, she's really good. She's won a bunch of belts. She does real well, but she knows there's sometimes I get in and it's almost a fear of my life, and it is a brutal sport. And I've never, when you work with a basketball player, sometimes you say, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And, for a basketball player, it's not terribly, but for an MMA fighter, it's a whole different story. And so I'm just trying to, see if I can figure out some ways to help her, maybe obviously calm her mind and not feel that kind of end. I think she's looking also at, there's a big intimidation factor when you step in the ring, and she has felt that from other people where she felt like, from the first time that I looked at this person, I knew I was going to win. but she's been on the other end of that as well. And she goes, it's not that they were better than me when they beat me. It's like they kind of out, you know, that intimidation, you know. And so I'm trying to read as much as I can on it to, you know, to figure it out. But this is a whole different sport for me. But she came to me, so, you know, I'm excited to do it and to learn. But I thought maybe from your experiences I could figure out some different things I could do for her.
Yeah, I've had worked with that sport before with MMA fighters, which is a mixed martial arts. And just because some people don't know what that term means, I think... yeah, there definitely is the intimidation factor. It's like, and I think people pick up on that right away when you, yeah, step into the competition. If you're, it's good to learn to have a poker face, so to speak, fake it till you make it, or be, you know, even if you do feel kind of intimidated, it's really important to step up to have a face of confidence and to show that you're you know, extremely self-confident outside. And often there's thoughts, there's feelings and behaviors, and you know, it can go either way. You can work on feeling confident inside, and then it begins to show on the outside with your behavior, with your posture. And it can also work the other way. It doesn't have to just go from your feelings, you know, inside to outside. The good thing is it can work the other way. If you are, you know, change your behavior, change your stance, change something, what you do, then it can help you to feel more confident. Just like a simple example you could give her is, you know, standing up straight and standing, you know, with really good posture and your shoulders back and smiling. You know, when you do that, all of a sudden you feel, you know, your body, you know, is giving the stance of being more, you know, tall and strong and confident, and then it can help you just from having that posture of being strong and confident, then it helps you to internalize that and feel more confident as well. There's that's one thing to do ahead of time. You know, there's something called the power pose. I don't know if you've heard of that. There's a YouTube talk on it. This woman, Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y or C-U-T-T-Y, I forget how to spell her last name, but if you search on it, Power Pose by Amy Cuddy, it'll come up. And she talks about, you know, something you could do right before, and this is helpful for you as a coach, you know, it's something you do like 2 minutes before you're going to go do something important, that your athletes could do. It's also good if you're going to give a speech, you know, go in a bathroom even, or someplace private outside next to your car or any place, and do what she calls the power pose. And so you just, you know, it's kind of like a warrior stance. You're standing, you know, with one foot in front, and your arms are out. You take your arms completely out to the side, like spread eagle. And, you know, so you're open and strong and just breathing. So you're really standing tall and standing in this strong power pose for about 2 minutes. And you just stand there and breathe and just, you know, and give yourself powerful, you know, affirmations. Like, I'm strong. I can do this. I know how to do this. I've done this many times. And even while you could make her a visualization, you know, with lots of power words, lots of, you know, say 10 different affirmations that, you know, you and her come up with together, say, like a list of her strengths. find out what, you know, you say she's really good, she's won belts before, you know, ask her what makes you a good fighter, what makes you strong, what makes you a great athlete, and have her list those things specifically for her, what's, you know, good, a good MMA fighter, and list those specific strengths and make her audio for that, MP3, and then she could be listening to that, you know, well before she goes to bed, and also like right before competition when she's doing this power pose, she could be standing, you know, with one leg back and her arms straight out and head up and standing tall and then listening to your MP3, or after a while she starts to probably memorize the MP3. Memorize those affirmations. You know, I can do this. I'm getting stronger and more focused every moment. I believe in myself. I radiate an inner confidence. You know, when I'm fighting, I'm in my element. And just saying those things over and over a few times, that can really get you in the zone, you know, right beforehand. And then so when she goes out there to fight, and that's something you can do anywhere, you know, in a bathroom, outside, in at the locker room, so that when she goes out there, she's like goes into the ring feeling really strong, you know, so that at first, the few seconds, she, you know, eludes, and you can even do a visualization where she, you know, has this sense of whole sphere around her, like a protective sphere of, you know, that nothing can hurt me. That's a good one to kind of imagine a bubble or a globe, a sphere around you of protection so that you can just, you can fight, but you're not going to get hurt kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, yeah, kind of different visions like that. You could make her an audio training about, you know, resilience and bouncing back in case she does get hit. Or something happens, you know, being able to bounce back quickly, you know, kind of working on having a strong bouncing back muscle. And so those are some ideas to feel really good, to have that, and have that look, just, you know, sometimes eye contact can make a huge difference, like, you know, have the eye contact that kills kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's funny because that's exactly what she said when she won this last. She said when she was looking at the eyes of her opponent kind of looked down in a sheepishly type, just for a second, and she goes, "That's when I knew I could beat her."
Uh-huh.
And it was just that little second of she looked down at the ground and kind of looked back up and you know, she was staring at her the whole time. But she goes, "I've done that myself." And so, you know, it's like the whole fight was decided right then, you know.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Just in 1 second, portraying, you can portray the right thing or the wrong thing. Strength. So make her aware of how important that is, yeah, to go out there and no matter what kind of eyes the other person has, they may, you know, look like they've got the upper hand, but you can say, I'm going to look that person in the eye like they are, you know, I'm invincible kind of thing. And make her, you know, and practice that, I would say, you know, just with her, do you see her in person?
Yeah.
So if you see her in person, you know, practice just saying, okay, we're going to, you know, they call the names and even though you're not probably an MMA fighter yourself, but everybody has the ability to have eye contact, you know, just imagine, you know, just she just needs a set of eyes to practice with. So practice going
it's
out
kind
there.
Kind of a stare down type.
Yeah,
response.
Stare down, right. Exactly. And you could try to give her a really, you know, tough look kind of thing and have her practice giving you.
I'm afraid of her, to be honest. She's about, I think she's close to 6 foot, and she is ripped, and she's mastered 4 martial arts, and she's a kickboxer too. So she would just destroy me. So that's kind of hard for me to, you know, to think about. But I understand, you know, it's maybe, and it's also for a certain amount of time. They're only there for that, and so maybe if she were to practice for just that time, you know, that would certainly help. You know, how long, you know, probably just a couple minutes, I would imagine, right before when they go to the middle of the ring.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Yeah, but just emphasizing how important that first couple of minutes is, that if, or the first, you know, 10 seconds or 5-10 seconds of eye contact, it's like, you know, to emphasize to her that the eye, you're really, it's almost like you're that's part of the match. That's the most important, can be one of the most important
yeah.
parts of the match, is that first 10 seconds. If you can give a sense of, I'm, you know, it's like Muhammad Ali, who just passed away recently, I'm the greatest, you know.
Yeah.
Have her, you know, that's there's so much stuff about Muhammad Ali since he just passed away, you know, that's, you might want to have her look that up on YouTube and some of the things that he would say, and it's just a very inspirational.
Well, and I bet you it's, just from talking to her the last couple of times, I bet you this is something that she's never practiced.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really practiced. It's not, you know, she, you know, but I said, you know, and I'm going to ask her next time. It's like, have you ever just just pull all the fighting out of it and just practice on how you look at your competitor?
Yeah. So that's really important. Yeah, because if you look down for a few minutes, or you know, look away, or look scared, it signals the person, yeah, that I'm not feeling that great. You know,
yeah.
I'm a easy target. You don't want that. So have her practice that. However, and then ask her for. A lot of times, athletes will come up with ideas that you hadn't even thought of. She'll think of something, how she could practice the eye contact with either with you or with other competitors there, you know, that she practices with, other people that are maybe that she's, if she practices with somebody she's better than first, you know, she can get, you know, do the stare down. And
I just thought of this, that maybe I'll have her watch Mr. T in the Rocky movies.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you remember him, but, man, he had a stare down that was crazy.
Yeah. And you could even, you look it up, you know, athletes' stare downs.
Yeah.
Sure there's probably a lot of that on the Internet. How to do, you know, how to do a competitive, be top dog in your stare down or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just the eyes, and then it's also the posture, you know, just looking as tall as you can. And just and so.
Yeah, and she, you know, like I said, she's about 6 foot and just, you know, as quick as lightning, you know, really powerful.
Uh-huh.
I've seen her fight, and it's just, it's a, you know, and, you know, her foot to your head is almost as fast as, you know, her fist to your head, which is just crazy, but.
Yeah, amazing. So, yeah, that's good to remind her of what her strengths and what she can do really fast. What's her best, you know, say, what are your best moves? And you should probably list, you know, things, maybe technical things you don't know all the names of, but you can write them down anyway and look them up later. And then put those in a audio training too. What are your best moves, and then just use those right away. Practice that being, you know, I'm the greatest kind of thing. I'm a badass.
Yeah. And she is.
Telling yourself, yeah. And to project that right from the beginning, actually beforehand, you know, get the upper hand. If the other athlete is not, you know, all together and you come into the ring, you're really strong first, you got the upper hand on that other person. So, you know, have her practice, you know, get in that mode like 2 minutes beforehand, not in the ring itself, but beforehand just getting really strong. So, great. Well, thank you, Jeff, for that's a great
sure.
question.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Does anyone else have questions? Anyone else new that came on? Okay, well, thank you all. It's about we're about out of time here, so everyone put on your calendar the next, let's see, the second, fourth, Thursday of the month. So our next one would be July the 14th is the second Thursday. But it turns out that this, actually we have 5 Thursdays in June, so I may well do one next Thursday, you know, the bonus call. Just because it's a fifth Thursday, so we don't go so long without a call. So we can do that. I'll announce that here on our an email to you. And I just wanted to mention there's a new woman, June, just joined the course, and she just had a quick question about, wanted to ask, how many sessions do you find you're able to comfortably do in a day or a week? You know, as a coach myself, I just do 1 or 2 a day, but a lot of people do more, like, you know, 5 or 6 a day, you know, sessions with clients. So it just depends on your own schedule and what you can fit in. Sometimes I'll do, you know, 5 or 6 depending on what's going on. But it's, the important thing is that you have schedule time in between, at least 10 or 15 minutes in between, to kind of clear your head, go for a walk, go to the restroom, get some water, and, you know, so that you're fresh for the next client that you're working with as a coach. And so that's the, she asked, June asked, how do you approach blocking out time slots for sessions? I'd say, you know, it's good to, if you can, you know, put a half an hour in between a session so that you have time to do other things and clear your mind. You don't want to go right from one session with someone right into another session because it's really intense and you want to be at your best, especially when you have a new client. You want to make sure that you've got plenty of time beforehand, you know, to get focused. It's almost like Jeff, when you're talking about getting in the ring with an athlete, you want to be totally focused on that new client. So get yourself ready and focused, whatever you need to do. I think for me, going for a walk really helps to clear my mind. Other people might be just doing a quick meditation or visualization, but to not have something heavy. If you're having a new client, then don't have a heavy meeting right before that. But be, you know, just be ready to go with that new client so you can do the absolute best work you can. So, hope that helps this new woman, June. You can join us, so hopefully join us for the next call, too. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I really appreciate it's always an honor to work with each of you. And look forward to our next call, July 14th, and then we'll probably have one next Thursday as well, on the 30th, since that's a special fifth Thursday of the month. Okay, thanks, everyone. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, bye now.
Bye.
Okay, bye.